Hello, and welcome to ParentWise, a parent education podcast on child development from Squamish Waldorf School. I'm Kirsten Andrews. This week, we begin with an introductory two-part series, From Birth Through 21. Our guest is Christine Martin, founder of the Squamish Waldorf School. Christine was a Waldorf kindergarten teacher for 10 years before taking her primary teacher training. She has recently completed one cycle of teaching a class all the way through grades 1 to 8. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
I'm so happy that you're here. So today we want to talk about child development in the realm of Waldorf education. And there's many stages of child development. How do you and how does Waldorf look at this?
Waldorf looks at the child and the development of the child in three aspects. That there are these soul aspects that we as human beings have, and it's willing, feeling, and thinking. And feeling and thinking are fairly straightforward. We're really familiar with that. I'll just spend a minute talking about willing, because that's kind of the most mysterious part. And the will in adult is the drive to accomplish something. And so for an adult, it becomes conscious, but in a child, it's unconscious. And it's really their movement to meet the world. When we talk about will, we're not talking about like the stubbornness of a child, but actually almost the will to move through some of the challenges they have to meet as they grow up. So these are the three aspects that we look at as the children grow. Mm-hmm. And they vary depending on what age they are as they are at different stages.
Mm-hmm. So with Waldorf education, we hear a little bit about the first 7 years, 7 to 14, 14 to 21. We're going to be talking about the first 7 years of child development today. So I guess a lot of the things that you might suggest in relating to these, this particular set of years isn't necessarily the same for the subsequent ages. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. How you meet the young child at the different stages is really important, because if you know and understand their development, then it's much easier as an adult to meet them in the most appropriate way for them. So definitely to meet a child at 3 and them having a tantrum or a difficult time versus a 13-year-old having a very difficult time, you will meet those very differently. Mm-hmm. So for this talk, we will just focus on the first 7 years, because it's what's unfolding for the child at the time that if we truly understand how they're changing, what their challenges are, and how they're meeting the world, then we can help them meet the world.
Great. With respect to the will, can you tell us a little bit about how it develops in the child?
The will is really the most predominant aspect when they're first born. Like the feeling and thinking have not yet fully started to emerge, but the will has. Like the little baby has come into the world and they're figuring out their limbs. The will really works out through the limbs, and you'll often see them when they're first lying on the ground and they're looking at their hands going by and they don't even know that it's their own limbs. It's mm-hmm. quite sweet. And so then they come in to go, oh, these arms and these fingers belong to me, and how do I control them? And how the effort that a child engages in to roll over at, you know, whatever months that may be, it varies by child, but 6, 7, 8, and rolling over, the amount of will and effort that makes is tremendous. And then they go from rolling over to sitting up to standing to some straight to running. Some do the walking, some do the running, but of course, and the crawling in between. So this will force is really powerful in the young child. The amount that the child has to engage physically in the world in the first 2 years is unbelievable compared to the rest of their life, really. And this will force helps them get there. And at this stage too, they're very open and receptive. So they're really learning through imitation. They're soaking in the world, they're looking around, they're seeing what the adults in the world or even their siblings are doing, and they want to start to imitate them. And that's really important for us to understand, because is our behavior worth imitating?
Mm.
It's something, you know, because they're picking it up. It becomes part of their habit body later. What is the child seeing and how are they picking it up in the early years?
A lot of parents, I would hazard a guess at saying first-time parents in particular, are really keen often to advance their child through those early stages of development. And you hear sides of both, you know, both sides of the story in terms of what's best for the child. Do you have an opinion on that or thoughts?
Yeah, and I must admit, for poor parents, there are so many different things out there and it just can be so overwhelming, and you have to find what fits with you. And I know when I found Waldorf education as a young parent, I really appreciated it because it made sense to me. And so with regards to, you know, the young child, one of the things that's so important, and it's hard, more difficult now in this day and age, is to be present with your child. Mm-hmm. With technology and stress and everything else, it's like, how do we just be present? How do we not rush things? How do we not, sooner is not better. Mm-hmm. And how do we let things unfold? And how can we find joy in the little moments that happen with the young child? And even for the young child, to lift their head is a huge accomplishment. And we tend to sit them up in car seats and or in these jumpers, and that's not great for their back. And it might be fine, you don't notice it when they're young, but actually they say or that they may have back problems later in life because everything was, you know, pushed upright too quickly. So really having them lie down on the floor when they're young, when they're still trying to get their strength in their neck, in their back, in their muscles, allow that. Allow them to enter into what activity they want with their own initiative when they're really young. Like sometimes that can be misleading. It's not they can do anything they want, and I'll get to that later when, as they get into things and the challenges is they want to do something that you don't want them to do, but that's another thing. But at this point, it's like what's naturally occurring. And give the child, if the child's trying to sit up and they need to push themselves a little bit more, give them time to do that. Yes, of course, a loving hand will help, but it's not like, oh, don't want my child to struggle. And that's a huge thing throughout their whole life. Know that some struggle helps build the strength of your children. And again, that's a continuum. Like if it's at a very end where it's actually dangerous or there's a real problem, then of course you jump in. And later in life, when it gets to be very stressful for them, there's times where you step in. But know that the children are building their strength through meeting challenges and building the resilience that way. And sometimes it's hard for us as parents to see that. So I'm bouncing a bit between different aspects, but it, definitely for the young child, as far as give them time, let them have free movement. You don't have to put them into, you know, swim classes or baby movement classes or making sure that you're moving their legs with your hands. They'll definitely move their body. If we start thinking, oh, we have to exercise them and move their legs and do these, you know, different things, then they'll depend on us to do it and they are weaker for it.
That brings up the idea of a rhythm or routine and habit forming. Is there something in there that, you know, you want to speak to?
Yeah, rhythm is really important for the young child. It really gives them a sense of security. If they have this sense of rhythm that is fairly consistent from one day to the next, it doesn't have to be absolute. And really having a time when the child, and this is getting a little older in the, you know, two or, you know, but actually, no, it goes right back to their sleeping patterns. Rhythm starts from the very beginning, but it's important throughout the ages. But where is the rhythm of your day? When are they waking up? How are they waking up? When are they eating? When are we having quiet playtime? When are we doing some reading a book? When are we going for a walk? When are we interacting with others? When do they have downtime? In our society, we tend to overbook children and they don't have breathing space. So one of the things we talk about in Waldorf education is breathing in and breathing out. So when do they have a time when they're breathing out, they're being more social or they're doing more active things and breathing in just to have some downtime? Our Western society doesn't give enough downtime. And that downtime is really, really important just to integrate all that they've experienced. So rhythm is a key piece in discipline. When we talk about discipline in Waldorf, we usually talk about rhythm for discipline. There's a place for discipline, but if you really carried rhythm right, there are far fewer discipline problems. They don't completely go away. That's mm-hmm. part of them growing up. They mm-hmm. need to have those tantrums to see where the boundaries are. But there'll be less if there's a healthy, healthy rhythm that carries them.
You're listening to ParentWise, a parent education podcast on child development from Squamish Waldorf School. For more information, visit squamishwaldorf.com.
A lot of that advice sounds like it's really good for adults too, just in terms of the breathing in and breathing out, you know, like not only just that literally
yes.
to pause and take a moment, but also to, you know, when we stack our days or our weeks, to look at how much energy am I expending, you know, over these few days, and am I padding it a little bit with some downtime to...
Exactly.
Yeah. Stay sane, stay able.
Yeah. And that's key for parents, because parenting is a challenge, and those who are working on top of that and other family issues or whatever it is, you need to also just, yeah, give yourself some time, some downtime. And the downtime can sometimes be at the same time as your child. If it's a quiet moment, you can take the breath to, or sometimes you need somebody else to take the child and you need to take some time to go for a walk or get that quiet time. And really, the more present you can be and the slower you can be, the more beneficial it is for the child, the young child. We tend in the Western society, and I'm really very guilty of this, mm-hmm. tend to be too fast. Like, you can actually hear, I'm laughing at myself because my voice is slowing down and I can feel it. I'm a fast talker. I love to do things. I get things done fast. But there's a real beauty in slowing things down energetically for yourself and your child. And your child lives in your energy in the young years. So are you calm? Are you present? Do you have that healthy rhythm? And then that child will feel safe. Things will flow much easier. But if you're rushing from place to place, you're slightly anxious, more than slightly, mm-hmm. The child's going to pick it up. You'll have more meltdowns, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Give time for transitions too. Like, sometimes we as adults think, oh, we are going to finish lunch and then go to the grocery store. Well, there's a whole bunch between lunch and the grocery store as far as, you know, how the cleanup's going to go, how the getting your clothes on that you need to go out to the car, or if you're going out to the park. Think that that is part of the whole play day, mm-hmm. is those transitions too. Don't kind of see them as an in-between that you have to get through. Live into them, give them time.
Right. It's almost like having lunch as a goal, putting our dishes away as a goal, getting our shoes on as a goal. And all of those things need to be achieved with the same sense of calm and joy, mm-hmm. hopefully, mm-hmm. As opposed to eat lunch, get to the grocery store, and yeah, crashing through all the rest of those mm-hmm. pieces.
Yeah, so true.
A lot of what you're saying is really sort of bringing me back to when my girls were young and in preschool and in kindergarten. The calm, you know, of the daily routine, the sing-songy voice of the teacher, the routine that they would go through at school, you know, paintings on Mondays and snack day on Thursday. They made the soup on Wednesday, ate it on Thursday. Tell us a little bit about what parents can expect from early childhood education in Waldorf.
Mm-hmm. The early childhood really is focused on giving the child a place that is safe, that is beautiful, that is calm, that they can unfold in, that they feel safe, and that they can engage in different activities and also be social and really just start to unfold and feel love. Like, And one of the things that you had brought up too about going through your day joyfully, that's really, like, that's beautiful because the children will feel joy from adults. So also the joy of the kindergarten classroom or the preschool classroom and the teacher, and also we as parents. And so the day is really thought out by where is that breathing in, breathing out? What is it coming to school? The warmth of the teacher when they meet the child and welcome them. You know, the transition, either some of them will start outside. A lot of the classes start outside, but sometimes it's inside. But how is that? And how do then the children engage with each other? And as I said, children learn a lot through imitation. So how is the teacher speaking to each child and greeting each child? And it's really sweet because you'll see that children, when the teacher greets the children, one child coming in a very sweet, kind way, then the other children will do that too. And it's so nice to see you, Johnny, you know, and you'll start to, which is really quite fun to see, is the children repeating things you're saying. And it's, yeah, we giggle because, yes, sometimes you hear from children like things that parents have said that we've said, you know, just by accident, or it slips out.
And muttering under our breath.
And yet that comes too. So, I mean, that's human. But how do we create this environment that the children feel really comfortable and they know what's coming next too? So, and they really feel comfortable. And then the focus is unfolding in creative free play. So children who engage in creative free play tend to be able to have that base as they grow older to bring that then into the intellect and have more creative thinking, and is a really good foundation for the intellect. But it's a creative free play that gives that foundation. It's not going, okay, we've got to do our ABCs right now and start drilling them. That's not what they need at the early age. They need to really bring themselves into the world, into a place that's warm and comfortable and unfolding and guiding. Like I said in earlier, it's not about letting them do anything they want. That's not the case. There's pure guidelines as far as if it goes over this way, then it's like, no, we'll come back this way. But it's also, in that case, how do you guide the child back? And do we guide them back with frustration? And that happens sometimes with parents. But maybe take that breath that you were talking about. Have that downtime where before you guide the child, am I in a good place, and a peaceful place? Often you'll find the, you know, 2s, 3 years old, or actually it's like, no, I don't want to do that. And one of the things we sometimes did, or I did with my children, right? It's like, time for bed. No, I don't want to go to bed. It's like, oh, I know you don't want to go to bed. And you put out your hand and you walk them to where they need to be. Now, given also that is before bed, there's a routine where you're turning down the lights. You might read a book that, like, under low light. You're cuddled on the couch. Or telling a story. You might even light a candle that kind of gives that presence. And everything calms down, the whole house calms down. So you're doing a whole bunch of things to get them to bed, because that's a whole other rhythm. But within that rhythm, as I said, if a child says, no, I don't want to, you're not intellectually saying, well, you have to, and this is what we're doing. You just go, yeah, I understand you don't want to. Yeah, and I get that. And here we go. So less battling, less intellect, and more movement. Because they're in their will, you can move with them. It's amazing how you gently put out your hand, and they'll hold your hand, and then off you go. You know? And also, when they're younger, you can get them sidetracked into something else, or interested, because their interest can flow very quickly. As they get older, that's not the case, and that's not the right strategy necessarily, but definitely works when they're younger.
I can hear a few voices in my head of parents saying, you know, that's not going to work for my child. They're very defiant, or they have, you know, ideas of their own that they want to exercise.
Yep.
So where do you start with that? Is it in laying the groundwork, you know, more consistently throughout the day? Or what do you advise parents when it comes to that scenario?
Oh, and it definitely will happen. Yeah. And but definitely, as you said, the groundwork is really important, because the more you have that healthy rhythm, consistency is key. So sometimes that's tricky between two different parents who have different styles, mm-hmm. but the children get to know that too. And it's also interesting how a child behaves differently with different parents. So that, look at that, because it's like, what am I doing that is supporting a certain behavior that you may not want? And you're really trying not to be supporting it or creating it. But if you maybe look a little deeper, you can see, oh, maybe I am. Mm-hmm. So definitely, like, the healthy rhythm, catching it before it comes, mm-hmm. Almost, because mm-hmm. you could often see a child getting more tired or more agitated or more something or max, and you get there before it becomes a complete meltdown. And then you try to guide them. As I said, it's like, oh yeah, take their hands. But there'll be times too when it's like, no, we're not doing that right now. Mm-hmm. Like, just straight kind. If you're mad or if you're anxious or if you're frustrated, that, as I said, because they're imitating, you're just building on their frustration. Yeah. Easier said than done, I get it. But the more calm you can be, and if they want to have their meltdown and have, it's like, stay calm. And it's like, no, mm-hmm. you know. And,
Don't add fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and give them a few minutes, maybe. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's enough. Let's go. There might be times like that you just have to remove them from the situation and pick them up and go, okay, you know what? We're going to go sit on the couch together and just be here. Maybe you've hit your brother and it's like, no, we're going to have gentle hands. Mm-hmm. The other thing is talking in the positive versus don't do that. So it's like, because our brain sometimes registers the action and forgets the don't, mm-hmm. like don't hit. It's like, oh, hit. You know, mm-hmm. so if we can say, we're going to have gentle hands, or, you know, we're going to come over and sit over here. And that brings up another point, if I can just jump in here. Oh, no. Thanks. This thought of time out. Mm-hmm. Time outs when you're angry and they have to be by themselves is not a good thing. That's, you know, when they feel separated, they want to feel connected. But having a timeout where we need a break, it's like, let's have a timeout. We're going to read, or actually we're going to have a timeout and, you know, we're going to set this up over here. We need some downtime, you know, and we need to call that sometimes too. Like, mm-hmm. when do we need to just bring it down a notch?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Neufeld talks a lot about connect before you direct.
Right.
So also, if you're picking up your child from somewhere and you're in a hurry and all you can think of where you need to be next, it's hard to direct them because you haven't connected with them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the eye contact, the smile, the wonderful to see you, the hug, whatever it's going to be. And then make sure you're connected before you direct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The more anxious we are, the less connected we are. The more you can connect as a parent to yourself, the more you'll be able to connect to your child too. Self-development, like, is just something that your children benefit from too. You do, and so do your children.
You're listening to ParentWise, a parent education podcast on child development from Squamish Waldorf School. For more information, visit squamishwaldorf.com.
I find that there's been so many courses and workshops I've taken over the years, but the ability to practice some sort of meditation, but and have that sort of up your sleeve, mm-hmm. in the moment when everybody's triggered, to stay grounded and stay centered and focused on what you're doing and not escalate a situation, because that, I think that's a lot of people's go-to. We just mm-hmm. kind of react.
Yeah.
But to have the practice there so that you can call on it when you need it, as opposed to hoping it's there for you if it's not a muscle that you've developed, makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Meditation and a thoughtful, conscious effort makes a huge, huge difference. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And the book that you were referencing, or Gordon Neufeld and Gabor Maté, mm-hmm. wrote a book called Hold On To Your Kids. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those pieces of connection are mm-hmm. in that book. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the first couple of years and also maybe a little bit more into toddlerhood. Beyond the will, do you want to talk about the thinking and the feeling?
Yes. Yeah, that'd be great. So the feeling starts to come in, and you'll definitely, like, around the age two, they're starting to get more of a sense of it. But it's also not the feeling that you'll get, the depth of feeling that you'll get in a teenager, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's why they can so easily say, "I hate you, Mom." They really don't hate you. They're just frustrated because they want to do something else and you're not letting them. So instead of, you know, as an adult, we can say, "Oh, I'm frustrated. I wish I really could do that." They say, "I hate you." So the feeling is not fully matured yet. And the other thing that can happen too sometimes is even between two children. Some child could be upset with another child because they took a toy or they did some behavior, and it's like, "Oh, Johnny did this to me." And then the parents might even start to kind of accuse each other of something or battle or something. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You look down and the children have a great time. They're off playing again because they forget about it. They don't hold it for very long. It's like, it's very spontaneous. And, you know, they start to, at those ages, like before the age of two, they play more kind of on their own, and they'll build up their blocks. And sometimes actually children will take other children's blocks, not to play with them, but because they believe they're theirs, because their view is their world. What circles around them is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's sometimes hard as parents is that we want our children to behave so well with everybody that sometimes we're a little bit too uptight. Like, know that that's natural, and that's not mean for a young child to go over and go, "Oh, I'm going to take this block." That's instinctive. Yes, we're going to guide them and go, "Oh, we're going to share this," or, you know, "Oh, Johnny's playing with that right now. We'll leave that." And as they get older, they become more aware, and you can be more directive of that. But the feeling world now is they start to become a little social. That's why preschool is nice for them, because it's like, "Oh, I want some friends. I want to play with some other people too."
Mm-hmm.
And so that feeling world is really just developing. And the thinking is starting to come in too. And again, of course, it develops over the years. And sometimes people, they say, "Oh, my child had, like, has a great memory. They're amazing. They know all this stuff." And the memory for the young child is very, how can I say it, localized, as far as certain things will trigger it. Like, actually, if you ask a young child, "Oh, you know, what did you do in preschool today?" "Oh, nothing." And parents are dying to know what happened. And or in kindergarten, it's like, "Oh, tell me about your day." "We did nothing," or, "I don't know." And that's really what is up there for them when they're, because it's not like a library. It's like, "What did I do today?" And you pull out these books and go, "I did this and I did this and this." It's really not there. But then you're cooking and the smell of the food triggers a thought, or smell actually often triggers thoughts of the kindergarten snack. And then all of a sudden you'll get the song that they sang with it, or you'll get the circle, or you'll get a huge story of what happened at playtime. And the parents go, "Wow, that's amazing memory." And so it is there, but it can't be retrieved at ease. And that's why we also don't want to start asking a lot of questions or pulling information out, because it doesn't easily come.
You're listening to ParentWise. I'm Kirsten Andrews. Our guest is Christine Martin. Continue with us in part two of this edition. Next.